We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
Imagine 4 years ago, right? 2015, we leave Nest and we're going to go start a startup. And you know what? We're going to go out and we're going to pitch people on a brick and mortar concept. How many doors got slammed in our face and like, oh yeah, brick and mortar, right? Sure, that makes a ton of sense. And here we are 4 years later.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Today's guest is someone who is reshaping the physical retail experience in a new way. Philip Robb is the co-founder and president of Beta, a retail-as-a-service startup that brings new tech products into its retail spaces for customers to try and provides a platform for brands to enter physical retail. Join us as we chat with Philip about how Beta is reshaping the future of bricks and mortar retail. And I'm joined today by my friend, my colleague, and my co-host, Chris Stewart. So how are you, Chris?
I'm doing great. How are you?
What's going on?
I'm pretty excited to be talking with Philip.
Why?
Because Beta is doing some really interesting things, and I'm excited to hear more about it.
Well, Philip, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you for having me.
We're very glad you're here because you've got a really great story to tell. But before we get to Beta, tell us a little bit about Philip Robb, your background, experience, and what got you here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think earlier before the show, we were talking about kind of live here in San Francisco now, East Coast transplant. And, you know, I think for me, it was kind of funny because, you know, we were talking before and you asked me if we had a store in Tyson's Corner. And it was really funny because I was going to say that we do. But I remember when I was in high school, I did this thing for extra credit. It was a retail competition and it was in Tyson's Corner. And I ended up winning the contest for a regional thing. And then I ended up going into this like national thing. And like, literally, it was just this kind of throwaway thing I did for extra credit. So the irony now then to come back. And I think the store, we have a small format store and we're in the process of opening one that's larger, literally right across from where I like did this competition, you know, when I was, you know, 16, 17 years old. And it all kind of comes full circle.
That's
right?
Pretty cool. It's a feature in the Alexandria Gazette, I believe.
Yeah.
I think we can sell that one.
Yeah, probably, right? Finally, I made it. Oddly enough,
Local Boy makes good. Yeah.
I think the highlight for me definitely was when we launched Beta. One of the first publications that covered us was the Washington Post, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's way cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, it was, I forgot who I was telling. I was talking to my wife, I think, last week, and I was talking about how I made this kind of progression of, you know, about school and you know, I have a law degree, which never really kind of put to any practical use, and then decided to go to business school after that. And, you know, and then the irony is that I end up in the retail industry. It's ironic as well as that, you know, my two co-founders, you know, had zero like retail experience. And I was the only one who kind of at least had worked, you know, previously to Beta. I was at Gap and I ran retail at Nintendo and Nest. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was, you know, really, I think what kind of made it all so interesting is that we were able to look at retail from a completely outsider's kind of point of view. And, you know, so that was, I think, really unique and something that, you know, I think is pretty exciting of kind of where we've taken this business. And,
well, tell us about the business. I mean, what is Beta? What does it do? How does it operate?
Yeah. So Beta at its core is retail as a service. So kind of, if you think about it, it's a marketplace. It's a platform. The idea really kind of taking, and where it really kind of started from is that myself and my co-founders, we were at Nest. Many would be familiar with Nest as kind of the company was acquired by Google, a hardware company. But we saw that what was happening is that brands were really struggling for their identity at retail. And because what was happening was that, you know, at the end of the day, you were selling your product to a retailer. That retailer was then marking up the product and then selling it to the end user. And, you know, if you were a small company, you didn't necessarily have a lot of say of how your products were represented. And we felt that that was just not equitable in the sense that, you know, we wanted to really democratize kind of the whole kind of experience. We felt like there was a way to do that through technology. And so for us, it was, you know, looking at saying, you know, how do you actually create software to be able to bring products into retail faster? How do you start to kind of reverse engineer kind of the whole online experience that everyone craved because you could get so much data, but then retail was a black box. Right. And so we said, you know, what if you started to tear away the business model of margin kind of wholesale purchase and start just letting companies acquire space, you know, almost kind of, and if you think about it, it's like if you went into a store, if you wanted to open a store in a mall, you would go to a REIT or a developer and for, you know, $100 a square foot, you'd be able to kind of have, you know, your own store. Well, what if you wanted to do that at a more kind of a micro level? And that's how we started to really kind of think about the retail space. And really that's what Beta is at the end of the day, is that we provide space and services to brands and provide a platform for them to be able to easily get their products on in our stores and to be able to, you know, ascertain data.
How do you find these brands?
You know, when we first started, it was, you know, going out and finding 45 people that were going to take the leap of faith and you know, come into our first store in Palo Alto. You know, since then, I think we've been able to it's a combination. I'd say about 30% of the leads are inbound, mm-hmm. Where companies now say, you know, I want to be in Beta. And we find that very often, you know, it's, you know, VCs or backers of saying, you know, look, in order to be successful, if you want to launch your product, especially in the consumer hardware space, you know, Beta is the place to go and you need to really think about that. But, you know, we also have a team of a partnerships team that's out there and really working to find really new and unique, you know, product offerings. And, you know, we've even started to employ, you know, a strategy where we allow our consumers to submit. And we're going to be in the process. I think we're launching a program where we're going to allow customers to submit things and hence we'll reward them, you know, for being able to you know, recognize or recommend a new product.
That's awesome.
Submit like their own products or something that they've seen on the market that they're interested in.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like if they see something, you know, they'll say, oh, we have consumers all the time. They're like, oh, have you ever seen this? You know, mm-hmm. they're our eyes and ears and they want to come in and see the really cool things. And so it's a really kind of unique way. If you really think about it, it's this kind of two-way street rather than, you know, if you think about the traditional buyer of like, well, I'm going to go out there and I'm only going to do to curate this product if I think it's going to be able to sell. We don't run that risk because we don't, while we carry inventory, it's all on consignment and we don't actually own the inventory.
Got it. You know, well, you should be aware, if you aren't, I hope I'm not the first to let you know that retail's dying. Bricks and mortar is out.
Oh, yeah,
online is in.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that you've kind of gone into this rabbit hole of expectations that, you know, retail's actually going to be able to survive this deep problem that they have. You agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's dead. We're done.
So
I don't even know why
you
we're
again,
here.
Yeah, I appreciate
you.
We
can end this conversation.
Let's talk about Alexandria.
Yeah, you know, it was really funny if you, so imagine 4 years ago, right? 2015, we leave Nest and we're going to go start a startup. And you know what? We're going to go out and we're going to pitch people on a brick and mortar concept. How many doors got slammed in our face?
Wow.
And like, oh yeah, brick and mortar, right? Sure, that makes a ton of sense. And you know, here we are 4 years later. And I think our biggest fear was that, like, did we actually get into this too early? You know, because you now see this huge trend where all these direct to consumer brands are now opening, you know, sure, retail shops, and not just only in kind of, you know, these, you know, the coastal markets, but really, you know, starting to kind of penetrate, you know, the entire U.S. because that's how they realize that they're going to continue to, you know, really just build a multinational brand.
Sure.
And, but yeah, so when we went out and we were trying to go out and raise money and to prove this concept, people were like, why would you, what? Brick and mortar? No, absolutely. Go build a store. And then you'd go back and like, oh, we built that store. Why don't you go build five and come back to us? Oh, okay, five. We'll go build 10, you know? And so we had this whole, we kind of chuckle about it. But, you know, the idea really is that we do think that the wholesale model, while I wouldn't say it's dead, it's definitely starting to kind of phase out. And you're realizing that what's going to happen is that, you know, the idea it's going to be more around attribution.
Yeah.
Understanding that physical retail still plays a major part in a retailer's arsenal of the different things that they're doing. And it is really multi-channel.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to survive. You have to have, you know, different layers within your business, but you can't just necessarily think about it as kind of, you know, the retailer that thinks that they, well, I have an online channel, an offline channel, is that's the retailer that's going to be dead.
Well, you know, it drives us nuts. The narrative is just so ingrained out there.
Yeah.
And then you see, you know, concepts like yours, highly successful, really changing things up. And that's what we keep telling these naysayers, these people that are pushing this retail is dying, retail apocalypse narrative, is that it's not dying, it's changing. And there's nothing wrong with change. And if you don't change, then you die.
Yeah.
So it's hard for us when we look at what you're doing, and we want to be helpful in making sure that people are aware of these kind of opportunities and what entrepreneurs are doing to help change retail, to help change perceptions of retail, and to help change that narrative. But gosh, it's annoying. It's really hard.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, if you look at, and I've done presentations in the past where I had slides, and you look at the brands that were the top brands in the 1970s and the 1980s, right? And most of them aren't even around anymore. Right. If they are, they're very close to kind of being extinct. It's an evolution, right? You just see, and that's why I always look at, and when people are like, oh, these guys are, the fact that Walmart is an underdog these days is pretty remarkable when you think about it, right? Yeah. But they're still yet, I remember, if you think about it, right? You think about, everyone was going after Walmart for all of their, different kind of practices and the way that they treated their people and all these type of things. And everyone wanted to kind of dethrone them. Now it's funny is that you actually see people are kind of rooting for them to kind of, take down Amazon. And so it's this fundamental shift that like you said, it just changes and the landscape will continue to change. And at the end of the day, we're all still going to buy product.
You've talked a lot about Beta being a place where people can kind of come in and experience these products firsthand, and that's going to help them, cross that barrier to purchase. Can you talk a little bit more about the store, the idea of a store as a place of discovery and what consumers are looking for?
Yeah. I mean, the other things you think about, if you start to look at, kind of looking at things in kind of from a generational shift standpoint, because it's really at the end of the day, it's like if you start to look at consumers, it's just, we're starting to see that, through the usage of through mobile technology, that people are shopping differently, that they're engaging in things differently, their usage of time. People don't want to be necessarily sold to, right? I mean, it's very, you don't want that sales pitch. It's not to say that you still don't want people to engage with you and maybe talk to you about the product. You want to learn about things. You want to discover things. I mean, we still all kind of have this kind of quest and desire for knowledge. But if you can do it in a way that's very conversational, if you can do it in a way that, people are, almost engaging in a very social element. I always told people when we first started, we should treat it as if like you're hosting a cocktail party in your home, right? Think about it. And if you think about a product, it's like, when you walk into somebody's home and they have a new, they just bought a new gadget or a new piece of art or, a new car or something like you get excited about wanting to talk about it and show it. And everyone wants to see it. Like that's at the end of the day, what it's really all about. And if you have that level of enthusiasm and it becomes euphoric to the point that you probably maybe want to buy it yourself or think about, purchase intent or want to learn more. And I think that's how we always approached the store, was that it was making products accessible and being able to allow people to kind of touch and feel them. And it wasn't behind a kind of a glass case and treating them as if, they're a thief because they're going to, you're trying to protect the sanctity and the security of that product, but really making it accessible. And that's what we think, why discovery and why we think that's where retail is headed. It's all about kind of that experiential element.
How do you staff the stores? Is it because you have all these different brands coming in and setting up their own stuff? Is it Beta staffers that are then learning about the product so they can interact with the customers, or is it the products are sending their own staff in?
The stores are all staffed by Beta employees, which we call Beta testers. Right. And for us, it really is about going out and finding very kind of passionate individuals. And it becomes challenging, right? You're dealing in some stores with 150 products, and you're expecting, those individuals to be experts. And we've invested a lot of money in training. We've invested a lot of money in our people to ensure that, we have, the highest quality individuals. If you look at our practices, it's almost all of our employees in our stores are full-time employees who make above market wages for retail staff, all with full benefits and really kind of in today all of them even receive equity in the company. And so it's really making them it's to incent, but also we all share kind of I think a similar vision, and I think we've been very fortunate that we've had low turnover and we'll hopefully, as we continue to scale, make sure that those are things that we're doing and really over-investing not only in our people, but also in the training, because we realize it's at the end of the day, it's the lifeline of kind of who we are and it's really important to brands. But we also require those brands to come in and to train our people as well. So it's not like you can just say, oh, here you go, here's the product and walk away, because, in order for you, if you want your product to be successful and you want to invest in you know, having your products in beta, at the same time, you need to invest and make sure that, you know, you're investing in the training and our people as well.
I saw one of the pictures on your website and the guy was standing there eating. I said, well, I like a place where you can eat. so is that kind of the, so, and then another picture, there was a group of people in a presentation. Mm-hmm. What was going on there?
I'm probably going to assume that the eating was maybe at an event that we were hosting.
I mean, I'm sure he didn't bring it in himself because it was on a plate.
In fact, you know, I noticed so we've got we just opened a brand new store in Hudson Yards in New York in March. And this weekend, I mean, we've had the traffic in that store has been phenomenal. And this weekend we hosted a event with one of our partners we'll do this product a disservice, so I won't even probably try to even to kind of describe it. But in that it was a kind of like a crock pot type of thing. And so they hosted an event in store where they were kind of cooking in store. So we're constantly, again, it goes back to this experiential element, allowing not only the brands to do kind of daily demos, but then at the same time to utilize the store as theirs, right? I mean, we believe and we kind of treat it to say it's your flagship.
Right.
You know, if you're coming in, and especially if you're, whether you're a small brand that may be in a handful of stores, and, you know, we've got one product where literally there is one employee of the company, but he outsources a lot of, the production on other sides. And he's in all of our stores, and they've been a great partner to work with. And, he comes in and he does, host events in the stores. And then we've got companies, that we work with, like Google, that come in and also host events because they realize and recognize there's something fundamentally different that they can do within one of our stores versus, a big box retailer.
What is your product mix?
You know, when we first started off, it was very consumer electronic heavy. Mm-hmm. I think what for us, though, it's really evolved to more around kind of discovery of new innovative products and services. So the idea is really about discovery. You come in, you don't necessarily always know what you're going to get, but it is going to be on a cutting edge within that category. And so, we've expanded out. We have apparel in some of our stores we've tested. Mm-hmm. We've got supplements. We really are kind of running the gamut because the idea is that we want to kind of, the store is always evolving. So we change about 10-15% of the store has new products every month.
Okay.
Because again, when you're working sometimes with small companies, those companies may go out of business and it's a reality. At the same time, you have very tried and true products, which some of them have been with us for 2 and 3 years, but they perform exceptionally well and they're still very kind of popular with consumers. But at the same time, we want to make sure that there's this newness every time you walk into our store.
So who is your customer? Is it these early adopters who are really excited about new technology and are ready to try things? Or are you finding more people who are just kind of walking by and, oh, this is interesting. What is this gadget that I'm looking at?
Yeah, I mean, the stores were originally designed to ensure that we weren't creating rejectors, right? I mean, the idea is that, if you look at where our stores are, they're in high traffic mm-hmm. street locations, lifestyle centers, malls. And we wanted them to be inviting to the point where what we would found is that originally it tended to skew a male consumer, probably somewhere in the ages of let's call it 35 to 45. But what we would find is that as consumers would come in, maybe that consumer would be accompanied by the spouse or their kids, and then they realize that wow, there's actually something pretty cool here for me. As you realize that as you start to go around, that the products themselves are not curated for a 45-year-old male, they're curated to kind of, I think evergreen in a way that you can always find something for everyone in our stores.
So if looking at what you've done in the past, I think you had a partnership with Macy's at one point in time.
We still do.
So
Macy's,
still do?
Yeah, so Macy's led our last round of funding. So they led our Series B. And one of the things that I think, couple things, with Macy's is we do have a store inside of Herald Square.
Mm-hmm.
We partnered with Macy's for to be in that location. One, because it's one of the the most iconic department stores in the world, and we're right there off of the 7th and 34th entrance. And so, it's great from a traffic standpoint, and they're a great partner there. But ultimately, at the end of the day, our partnership with Macy's came down to more of helping power their marketplace concept. So the market at Macy's,
right,
which is this great kind of curated space within their stores. And I think what, you know, what Macy's and their leadership saw is that, you know, as they, you know, they had the, they realized as they were going through a transformation, you know, they had to make some decisions of what to start to do. You know, they wanted to close stores or did they want to better optimize their stores?
Right.
And so I think they started with Backstage, which was kind of their kind of, you know, off more discount concept. And rather than taking Backstage, you know, and going and acquiring more real estate, like you've seen, you know, Nordstrom do with Rack and stuff like right. that, they said, let's actually put it within, you know, our stores, find a home for that and figure out how to kind of, you know, to remonetize that space. Similarly, I think they recognized that there was a huge opportunity to start working with a lot of local vendors in certain markets and figuring out how they could create more of a marketplace. And so, you know, what we did was we worked with them to actually to build the software to allow them to onboard products, allow them, you know, the companies inside of that to also understand and see, you know, the data and analytics within that. So it's been a great partnership. You know, like I said, and we've been working now with Macy's for well over a year, and you know, they've been, you know, it's been a delight to work with them, and you know, love the leadership team there.
I remember when they first announced that they were doing this, and it was, I don't want to say it was widely panned, but people were like, that just sounds like another, you know, grasping at straws
yeah.
to, you know, stay relevant. And yet you see now that success that they really had with that and how people have, you know, really liked it. The customers
yeah.
like it. It's worked well for the stores. I guess you'll be seeing more of that, I would think. I mean, some other, yeah. you know, large brands yeah. wanting to kind of catch on to that wave.
Yeah, we've actually talked to quite a few brands that realized, you know, so imagine you've got a large store and, you know, you have the opportunity to say, well, maybe it's not as productive as it could be. Like, what do you do? Either you shut it down
right.
or you figure out some other way to monetize it. Right. And I think, you know, retailers recognize that there's probably a better way to monetize it. And, you know, if there's so many, you know, start to think about now that there's technology out there that will allow them to do that. And so, you know, you're definitely going to see it happen, see it think in a much bigger scale, because, you know, I know that we're already kind of working with a couple other brands that are interested.
We'll be on the lookout. So, Philip, we're getting tight on time, and I'm really sorry. I've got more questions, and I've dominated. I'm sorry, Chris, but it's been really, really interesting. I think this is kind of the next wave that we're going to see really take hold within the industry, and it's very exciting. I mean, and again, it really does help us. At the NRF, I like to say that, you know, our primary mission is to tell the story of retail. Mm-hmm. It's a great story to tell.
Absolutely.
And it's people and companies like yours that help us to tell that story in a very credible way. So for that, very grateful. Thank you. So before I let you go, however, we do have a part of the program that you may not be familiar with, and it's called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you some questions, and you're not going to think about it. You're just going to answer with the first thing that comes to mind. All right. Philip?
Now, is this part edited?
We'll see. It could be. Chris, start us off.
What was your first job?
Oh, I worked at a company called Roy Rogers. I was slinging hamburgers. There's an East Coast thing for you.
Well, since you've mentioned...
I had to wear the straw hat, too, which was really embarrassing when my friend showed up that first day.
You know, I found my pin for my first job, which was at McDonald's, and it had William on it. I was like, when did I go by William? But anyway, sorry about that. So since we're on the food subject, what is your favorite comfort food?
Burger.
What's a bad habit that you would like to change?
I have so many.
Pick one.
Spending too much time on my phone.
Favorite genre of music?
Classic rock.
Would that be Nirvana classic rock or
classic rock?
Yeah. I'm going to probably go true classic rock. So, you know, kind of 70s, maybe even a little 80s in there.
What's the best book or article you've read lately?
I literally just finished last night Billion Dollar Whale, which is a pretty interesting read. It's about this guy, Joe Lowe, who essentially scammed billions of dollars. And he had said he had started a fund that was kind of the sovereign wealth fund out of Malaysia. And so it's a fascinating read, because if you realize of like so many different things that, you know, in pop culture that he actually ended up having touched So good read.
What's it called again?
Billion Dollar Whale.
Is that whale like the mammal or whale?
Whale like
a
the
shriek?
Mammal, correct, yes. Okay. Yeah.
A morning person or night person? Morning or night?
Oh, definitely night.
Very good.
Although with kids, I become more of a morning person over time.
You have to.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
The president of the United States.
Well, I think you made a better choice. All right. Well,
anybody can get that gig.
Philip, you did really, really well. Thank you for that. And Chris, thank you for co-hosting today's episode. Always appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Philip, you've been a great guest. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Great. And if you want to know more information about today's discussion, check out our website, retailgetsreal.com. And Philip, before I let you go, if people want to learn more about Beta, where do they go?
You can reach out to me or you can go to beta.com. That's beta.com.
B8 as in the number, numeral
8.
Yes, correct. Beta.com. Thank you. And to the listeners, please, if you have any feedback that you'd like to give us, please do it. Any ideas for the program, please send them along. And you can do that at podcast@nrf.com. Thanks again, and we look forward to talking with you next time.